X again on the X40. It's the X40. Yeah, I don't know.
You're talking about these guys, not the
EGA. Yeah. I'm going to talk about vSCSI and iSCSI-D. My name is Claudio Jecker. I'm an OpenBSD developer since quite a few years now. I'm normally doing network-related stuff, programs that I mostly wrote together with Henning is like BGPD, OSPFD. I did the MPLS stack, and as a side project, I was forced into iSCSI.
You wanted to go to a storage hack.
Yeah, I wanted to go to the storage hackathon.
So did I in a hack PF.
Yeah. So what I will cover in this talk is I will spend a few slides on what iSCSI is and what SCSI actually itself is, what vSCSI is, our virtual SCSI controller that allows userland to actually play with the SCSI subsystem of the kernel. And then I will cover iSCSI-D. So iSCSI is an RFC. It's a huge RFC. It implements SCSI over the internet. The RFCs, the original ones were 3720 and 3721. There are now newer ones out. I think they're in the 5,000 or even 6,000 range, but they're mostly the same. They just reverted a few sentences and put some new names on it, and it's just the way now IETF works. They have to republish everything every 2 years or they're not happy. The idea is to have a cheap alternative to fiber channel. Fiber channel is very expensive, and actually nobody really understands how fiber channel works. So it uses Ethernet or IP as transport medium, and therefore is a lot cheaper than fiber channel with its special fiber channel switches. For ISPs and like data center users, it's actually interesting because normally you have a large Ethernet infrastructure already present at your location, and so you can actually piggyback your storage traffic onto the already existing network infrastructure. It is network disk access, but it's only on block level. It's not like NFS or Samba, a file system network access. SCSI itself, the small computer systems interface, is Komupter, yeah, oh, sorry, is a very old protocol. It is almost as old as ATA, the ATA specification. It's a protocol to access I/O devices. You can access tapes, you can access disks, you can access CD-ROMs. You can actually do Ethernet over SCSI, which is really sick. It supports various physical attachments. So the original specification was parallel 8-bit. Then they made it like parallel 16-bit. They overclocked it up to almost 320 megahertz. No, actually 160 megahertz. Then they did serial, which is SAS, which is serial attached SCSI. It's more or less what using SATA, like the SATA ports, but with the SCSI protocol. Fiber channel uses SCSI to talk to the devices. Then USB and IEEE 3094 use SCSI in a way to access the block devices, but they're translating it into internally into another protocol. In OpenBSD, there is even more SCSI around. We emulate SCSI devices, the newer SATA chipsets, AHCI and Silly. They're using ATA SCSI, which translates from SCSI into ATA commands. Our RAID controllers are normally just represented as a SCSI device, like their RAID sets. So everything or almost everything apart from WD, the old PCI IDE stuff, is SCSI for OpenBSD. Maybe. So SCSI is everywhere. There is small stuff. You can have SCSI in your Swiss Army knife. Then there is the big stuff, which is normally fiber channel attached. So SCSI itself is a request response protocol. Normally the initiator, that's your card in the PC, is sending a command to the device, which is a disk. Then the disk responds to it and sends normally data together with it. A target can have multiple logical units. This is normally a disk only has a single LAN, but especially for RAID arrays, it makes sense to have like being able to address multiple endpoints on the same device. As I said, the initiator sends the commands. The command structures are normally called command descriptor blocks, CDB. In most cases, I'm writing here always, but there are a couple of very special messages that are asynchronous, like when a disk is freaking out, it can send an emergency message. But in most cases, everything is initiated by the initiator. That's why it's called initiator. iSCSI packs the SCSI transfers into TCP stream. The TCP stream allows a reliable stream of data. So they don't need to do anything special in the protocol to ensure that everything is correct. There is one session per LAN. Every session can only talk to one device. It's possible to have multiple logical unit numbers, like sub-devices, going over the same session, but normally most devices don't actually support that. It is possible to have multiple connections for a session, so a session is a bundle of connections. I haven't yet seen like the devices that I use, because they're a little bit cheaper, normally they just support one connection for a session. So there is a one-to-one mapping, and you can have like one command outstanding all the time. If you are able to have multiple connections at the same time, you can actually send multiple commands to the device, and by that, having something like the NCQ that's known from SATA devices. So it's possible to have multiple outstanding commands. But currently, since I haven't seen it, our iSCSI-D only supports a single connection for a single session, but there is a lot of code, or the code itself tries to be capable of doing multiple connections. There is authentication and option negotiation, which is normally done in connection establishment, especially on the first connection setup, so for the leading session. Authentication is often turned off, and the only one specified is CHOP, which is very, it's annoying protocol. Yeah, it's advanced. There is a nice little state machine in iSCSI. You have a connection that starts in a free state. It goes more or less directly into the login state, where you do all the login and negotiation handling. And then in the end, you actually want to end up here, logged in. That's the only time when you actually can send any SCSI commands. Everywhere else, it's like, especially the logout, cleanup, wait, and in cleanups, they're just there to do error recovery management. And in most cases, they're actually not even used, because when something goes wrong, almost all devices just close the session, restart the session, and don't do any of the advanced error recovery modes that the RFC actually specifies. So by default, TCP port 3260 is used. There are 18 message types. 5 of them are for SCSI commands. This is like data in, data out, ready to transfer, and the commands. So they're very, like, only a small subset of all the messages defined are used for actually transporting of the data. There are messages for login, logout, which is normally a pair, like there is a login request and a login response, and a logout request and a logout response. And then there are special asynchronous messages where the target actually is able to send something to the initiator and telling, like, I lost power, I'm going to be closing my sessions immediately, please shut down, and other kind of messages. And the final two are two NOP messages where nothing happens. They're just a ping. The RFC also defines a lot of buttons. Like the base RFC has already 22 buttons. Then there are extensions like RDMA, which add more buttons to it. So there is a lot of things that can be changed and tweaked and tuned, and nobody uses them. So I started to support like additional extensions and try them against all my iSCSI targets, and just like none of them is actually able to like use a larger receive window or likes to do multiple sessions or multiple connections or all these additional features. Like even the error recovery level is never bigger than zero, which is just like the very basic error recovery mode. Now, let's start with vSCSI. That's, in my opinion, the very nice part about iSCSI-D is that I actually have still no idea how SCSI works. That's all put into this vSCSI driver that David Gwynn wrote. It is like 600 lines of code. It's very simple, and it just makes my life so much easier. So what it does, it actually exposes the SCSI subsystem, or normally the SCSI bus, as it shows up in our D messages, to the user land. So user land is able to play an initiator or a SCSI card, and the SCSI subsystem, that's mostly the SD driver, will happily talk to you. So I can implement an iSCSI initiator completely in user land. This makes debugging a lot easier, because I can use GDB to see what's going on. I can track memory leaks, and I don't have to think about like all the other issues that normally arise when you hack in the kernel, like the SPL protection and everything. So when you want to write a block to an SD, to a SCSI device, the buffer, like we have the buffer cache, which handles all this block IO, it puts the block into it calls the SD device with these blocks and says, write this to this offset. And the SCSI device will then translate this into a SCSI command, sends this down through the SCSI mid layer to the initiator, which in this case is vSCSI. So vSCSI queues this command and signals the user land to actually read this command from an IOCTL. When the user land finished the whole transaction, vSCSI will close the transaction, will close this command and clean up all the way up to SD, and then the buffer cache knows, okay, this write actually succeeded. So it is actually a fairly simple interface. There are only a few IOCTLs necessary to actually make it work. And the very good thing is, because it's just a normal SCSI bus, I suddenly have also access to other special devices, like the multipath extensions that DLG just committed a couple of weeks ago. Multipath is very interesting for iSCSI because, as I said, most applications don't, or most targets don't support multiple connections. So to fake multiple connections, I'm just running multiple sessions to the same target and use multipath across it to have the capability to run multiple IOs at the same time to a target and get more transfer or more performance out of my iSCSI. So, as I said, there are six IOCTLs. There is actually no read or write function. You just open the device and then use IOCTLs. You can use select and poll and KQ to listen for something to happen on vSCSI. So if a command is pending, it will wake you up. There are the two command IO controls. That's the vSCSI I2T and T2I. So I2T is initiated to target. That's the command I'm sending to the target. And then the target normally comes with a completion at the end and says everything is good, or I failed to write because of this and this reason. So the transaction starts with a vSCSI I2T IOCTL and stops with a vSCSI T2I. Then the vSCSI data read and data write are the actual functions that move the data. The read is reading data from user land, so that's when you're reading from a disk, it's always from the system's point of view. So I want to read or I want to write, and not like it's a little bit the other way around when you're looking from the program's perspective. Then there are two last IOCTLs which are necessary to be able to probe a SCSI bus. Normally, SCSI buses in OpenBSD are only scanned during boot up. And afterwards, when you like attach an additional disk, it will not get probed. It depends on the controller. There are a couple of controllers we are able now to do hot plugs. But most of the time, especially with older controllers, nothing will show up until you actually reboot your box. So for vSCSI, we have these two IOCTLs, which allow us to tell the SCSI bus or the SCSI subsystem, something on this bus has changed. Please reprobe this specific target or any target. And then it will go and do these inquiry commands and identify the disk and attach it. So if you're able to attach something, you also need to be able to detach it. This is like when you're closing iSCSI D and you actually want to do a nice clean cleanup, you actually would go and say, this target disappeared, please detach it, and then you do a vSCSI request detach. The request detach is actually also more or less done implicitly when you just close the file descriptor. It just cleans up everything, which is nice when an application crashes. Doesn't happen that often, but it happens. There are a couple of IOCTLs. So we have the device event, which is for the last two IOCTLs that I mentioned beforehand. Then we have the I2T and T2I IOCTL specific structures and the IOCTL data structure. Normally, the first thing you want to do is you actually want to open the device and then do a probe. You want to attach something to it. So you specify a target number, which is just an integer. Normally, you start with 0, 1, 2, 3, and go on. That's the like the SCSI bus ID. And you specify the LUN. So in most cases, you like for iSCSI D, I'm just counting up the targets linearly. And I'm telling it to probe LUN 0. Or now it's actually possible to tell, please test all the LUNs on the device. So this is what the IOCTL does. It will then actually, you send this IOCTL, and the next thing that happens is you suddenly have an I2T on your vSCSI device. So this is what happens, yeah. You get your I2T. Normally there is a select loop in here, or iSCSI-D itself uses libevent, so there is an event suddenly popping up telling me I have data available. So the first thing then in the event handler is I issue a vSCSI I2T IOCTL. This gives me the actual command. It gives me the sequence number of the command and how I can identify it and how I can close it then in the end. So what I have is I have the direction. I know if it is a write or a read. I know the tag, which the tag identifies a SCSI command. It is possible to have multiple SCSI commands outstanding at the same time. So this is how we identify them. And with these two informations, I'm actually able to know what I actually have to do as next. So I'm storing the tag. I'm allocating memory for the outstanding. Like I know how much a write will be or how much data a read wants to get, so I can allocate this buffer beforehand. I'm then able to set up the data command, which has as only things in it, it has the tag to identify the transfer, and it knows how much data I want, and the buffer itself, and can then issue the IOCTL, which will give me the data. And at the end, I'm cleaning up. So the same thing in the other direction. So if it is a write, if it is a read, it's a little bit more complex because I first need to get the data from the other side. Then at the end, I'm actually issuing. This is wrong here. It's a copy and paste bug. I'm actually issuing then at the end a data read IOCTL with the data that I just got from the other side. In iSCSI, this is a little bit more complicated because they try to be smarter than they actually need to be, but it's IETF. At the end, we need to close this command. So what's happening is we use again the tag that we got from the initial I2T IOCTL. And we use the status that the target actually told us what the status is, and send that to the SCSI subsystem. Now, if you look at these examples, it's actually pretty interesting because there is not much of SCSI. Like, there is no SCSI parsing or anything happening in all this. And the same thing is actually in iSCSI-D. In iSCSI-D, I actually don't look anything at all at SCSI messages. I just take whatever the other side is sending me and pushing it down into the kernel, and the kernel will do all the parsing. So this makes the code a lot smaller and easier. Finally, it's possible to detach the disk by specifying the target and the LAN that this disk is gone. So vSCSI is very good, but it could be a little bit better. One of the biggest issues that I found out is that some targets like to send data out of order. The one biggest, like I got the information that especially OpenSolaris target mode likes to send data the other way around than normally. And vSCSI actually likes to get the data in sequence. So it's possible to only send junks in a data read or data write command to request a junk or to send down a junk into the YARUCTL. But they all need to be in order. And at the end, you have to write all LAN bytes. But it's currently not possible to do it the other way around or specify like an offset. Like this is a block that is at offset 2K inside this request. This is something that we probably need to fix, or we have to buffer all the requests in the kernel and in user land again, which is not really nice. There are still a few man page bugs, but we probably get that fixed too, somewhere. iSCSI-D itself, it's nothing new. FreeBSD has a kernel initiator. NetBSD has a user land initiator using refuse. They also have now, since like I think 2 weeks or something like this, in kernel initiator. And the interesting thing about all these is they're fairly big. Like there's a lot of code in them. And when we were starting with it, we thought we can do better. Especially because of vSCSI, we think we can do a much simpler implementation. And simpler is often better. It gives you more security because there is less code run at special privileges, especially in the in-kernel initiators. They run everything in the kernel. So that means they run chop in the kernel. They run all these string magic that is necessary to parse the options, they have to do that in the kernel. So if they have a bug in there, the effect of the bug is much bigger than doing all this complicated work outside of the kernel. So what we are able to do is we can drop privileges. iSCSI-D doesn't run a super user. It drops privileges, it change roots itself into an empty directory. And it is a lot less code. We also have a mild form of, like, not invented here syndrome. Also, yeah, it's a bit of an effect for us. Like, at least for me, I don't like to copy too much from other sites. But it is not another BGPD. It is much simpler. It doesn't use iMessages. No mention from Henny. but it uses a control socket. So it is somewhat similar, but it's different. As I said, it change root and it privilege drops. It doesn't need privilege separation. vSCSI is a device that you just need to open as root, but afterwards you can do everything with it. So I just need superuser to boot up iSCSI-D and to open this device. Afterwards I can change root, I can drop the privileges, and everything is fine. I don't have any special talks. I don't have to do DNS lookups because this is actually done by the iSCSI control program. iSCSI control parses the configuration and sends then just the necessary information to the iSCSI D. This is a bit different to like BGP or OSPF, which normally read the config on boot up, and the BGP control or the OSPF control just have a reload, which is a simple message you send to the daemon, and the daemon then actually reloads the config itself. So this is a different way of doing this. If it is better, it's not yet. We're not yet really sure if it is better, but we're going to see. VSCSI reduces iSCSI D to the simple tasks, or I'm not really sure, because in the end, VSCSI is like 600 lines of code. iSCSI D is a bit more than 600 lines of code, so maybe it didn't took away the easy commands, but it made it simpler to just concentrate on the problems of session handling. VSCSI itself has a very little impact on the kernel. It's very minimal code, and iSCSI D just does now the session handling, the connection finite state machines. It makes sure that your connection is up and running all the time. It just packs and unpacks the SCSI messages from the TCP stream. But it doesn't do. It doesn't look into them. So an iSCSI PDU is a structured data. The buffer management of iSCSI D uses this idea. So it is based on this PDU format. And the idea is that there is no need to do additional copies. And hopefully, it simplifies the data management, which I think it actually did. So an iSCSI messages is normally set up with, most of the time, just two blocks. You have your basic header, which is the header that tells what kind of command it is and everything. And you have a data segment, which is, most of the time, the actual SCSI data that you actually transport. You have an additional header segment, which is almost never used. You have a header and a data digest for paranoid people who think that a TCP stream with Ethernet checksum and IP checksum is not good enough for your SCSI. So that there is like bit flips that will not seen by these two checksums, you could actually enable a third one. In iSCSI D, we actually split this up into multiple small bits of data and use the idea of the vectorized IOs, like in read V and write V. Syscalls. So, how does it work? Both transfers are initiated by the initiator.
Surprise!
What happens is VSCSI will get a command and will, because of that, a libevent, because we're using libevent, a libevent event comes up and tells me there is something new on VSCSI. So the first thing I do is I do an I2T message to get this command off. I create a PDU buffer, I assign a task to it, and this task is scheduled. So this is more or less how it looks like. We have VSCSI, which gets me the IO event. I do the I2T, I create the PDU, I create the tasks, and then I have to schedule and queue this task across the session into the connection, which is at the moment just like there is one session, there is one connect, there is only one connection per session. So calling this scheduled task is a little bit strange because there is only one connection that can run one command at a single time. So it's more like a FIFO. So until here, I'm just doing management of tasks, and then it goes on to the wire. So the connection sends these requests to the target in this TCP request, and the target then does its magic. It does. It reads the SCSI request, goes with it into to his own block devices, gets the block, and tries to give me the data back. So as soon as it has all the data together, it starts sending me the data in SCSI data in commands. So I'm getting multiple blocks of data because normally the maximum receive unit that most targets support is 8K, but we're normally doing 64K reads and writes. So I'm getting 8 SCSI data in packets for a single transfer. So I'm getting all this data in. The task handling realizes, this belongs to the task that I just opened, and then writes these with the IOCTL into the kernel. At the end, the target sends me a response telling me everything was good. So when everything was good, I just can close the task and then tell vSCSI this transfer got completed with hopefully a successful message. The write is a little bit different. It's a bit more complex. It starts more or less the same. It's I'm getting an IO event, I'm doing the I2T, I see it's a write, I create the PDU, I create the task, I queue it, I schedule it, I send the request to the target. But now the target may be not ready. So what it does, it sends me back a ready to transfer message. And only after getting this ready to transfer message, I'm allowed to send out the amount of data that actually was in this ready to transfer message. So it's possible that the ready to transfer says, you can send me all the data at once. But it's also possible that the R2T says, at the moment, I'm only interested at the last 2 blocks of this transfer. So the task handling needs to manage that. It realizes, okay, I have an R2T, I have to send him this data. It gets the data from the kernel, creates the PDU, and sends then that out. Then afterwards, at the end, I'm getting multiple R2Ts. I'm sending all the data to the disk. And when the disk has written all data to the store and it's everything is good, it will tell me with a SCSI response that everything is finished. I can close the task. I can clean it up. And at the end, the kernel is informed that this transaction is done. And only then the data is actually moved up into the SCSI stack. Yep?
Does the iSCSI protocol specify that you can only do one, you get the one R2T and then you go back and then you do the SCSI up? See, the second, the third R2Ts you've got after that one's done, is that part of the protocol or could you send them all at once?
It is so that the protocol has knobs for this. So it's possible to specify how many R2Ts you accept, like outstanding R2Ts you have accept per command. So it's possible to tell the device during session boot up, the target can tell me, you can send me, I accept, or actually, I can specify I accept multiple R2Ts. Like I can queue up to five R2Ts at the same time, so you can send me them all in one go. But often, at least what I have seen is most of the time I just get one single R2T for the full command. Like they tell me I'm ready for everything. It's only the OpenSolaris one that I have seen where you actually get an R2T that is not for the full block. But this is also because OpenBSD just does 64K blocks as maximum. SCSI actually supports to do like megabytes of writes at one go, and then you often get multiple R2Ts. There is also another special feature is a target can specify that it doesn't actually need an initial R2T. It's like in any case, like in this case, I don't need this initial R2T. I'm by default telling you, you can send me 64K data after issuing the SCSI request. So this will reduce the latency massively.
Is there a reason you wouldn't do the vSCSI data right immediately after and not wait for the R2T? Would you get ahead of the game and just have the data ready? Why do you wait for the first R2T before you get the data?
Actually, I'm not getting, like, this is a little bit strange because I'm not, the data is ready by the kernel. So it's already there in the vSCSI, but in the kernel. So I could go. This is something I'm starting to think about it. This is how I did it initially. I'm issuing the IOCTL only when I'm getting the task, like when I'm getting the R2T, so that I don't have to buffer in userland. I'm thinking about doing it differently, so that I would do. Get me all the data at the top, and then handle it out of a buffer.
On the previous slide for the read, I had a question as well, which is do you handle out of order returns?
Currently.
And is that possible?
Currently, I don't support it because this is the problem with vSCSI. I cannot specify an offset. So I'm doing multiple commands, and they have to be in order. But this is currently not, like, the targets that I'm playing with, this is not a problem because they only send one, like, they always are ordered. But it is a little bit of a, like, it's not 100% clean. So this is the same thing. It would probably be better to actually buffer everything up in userland, so when it is out of order, I am doing the reassembly in userland and then send the whole block down to the kernel. That's something I need to investigate.
Actually, I think you would better change the vSCSI so you could have a reset, and then you put it in the kernel, so it would go as soon as you get that last.
Yeah. Yes. And again, here it's like there are ways to improve the situation. It's possible to have multiple data in commands outstanding, and there are other special, like it's possible to piggyback data directly doesn't really matter here, but in this case, it's possible to piggyback data directly in the SCSI request. But this is all like these options that the RFC specifies, but I have a hard time to find targets that actually support these special modes. This is maybe because I'm not rich enough to get the really expensive crap. So I guess that like if you're going to very specialized iSCSI hardware that is really high performance, they will probably have all these buttons. But all the cheap stuff, like these cheap NASs, the QNAPs and FECUSs, They just use the iSCSI target that's coming with Linux, and that one doesn't have too many buttons. But as maybe the important thing is, if you want to make it go fast, it's in the task handling and trying to reduce the amount of time you're spending with ping-ponging data back and forth. So that's where where currently iSCSI is the limitation, like why iSCSI as the protocol itself is considered slower than other like fiber channel, because you always have these multiple message going ping-ponging back and forth, so you have more latency picking up for a single command. And the bad thing is you actually can only have one task at the same time running per connection. So if you only have a single connection, you can have only one task outstanding. And this makes your iSCSI target the same as an old parallel ATAC disk. A session is a connection to a specific target. So from an initiator to a target, to a single target. So if you have multiple disks, if you export multiple disks on your target, you normally get them by having multiple sessions for each target.
And if you have multiple initiators to a single target?
Yes, we're using that. So iSCSI-D supports to connect multiple times to the same target by either using different IP addresses or if the target actually supports it, by telling the target that using different ports on the target, but on the same IP address. This is something that iSCSI, the protocol, has. It's possible to have multiple ports on the same IP address, but they're all belonging then to the same connection. And the interesting thing is that the multipath code is then actually able to use this additional information to know how to schedule commands. Like connections that, like ports that belong together, are like a bundle, and it will round robin over these, but it will not round robin between bundles. So this is especially important if you have a active-passive controller in your system. Because normally when you start to use both controller at the same times in an active-passive system, it gets unhappy. That's what happens with one of my targets. When I'm doing a connection to both disks and start doing I/O onto both controller, after a while, the target dies and resets. And this is not... There is a lot of cloak cleanup still having to be done. It's now part of OpenBSD 4.9. The code in 4.9 is by far not really ready, but it most like it works somewhat. Now the coding current is a lot better. I spent quite a few days in the last days to actually make it behave better, do better error recovery. So it does more, and it works fairly stable. I have a box at home running I/O again to an iSCSI target for days without any issues. There is still a lot of things open. Like there is all these options that are not yet implemented. As an example, I hadn't had time to actually look into CHAP authentication. So if you want to use authentication, iSCSI-D is not yet ready for that. But in most cases, people actually don't use authentication. Really future work that will be really interesting to make is actually in kernel acceleration. So the idea is that these iSCSI data read and data write commands that we currently have to issue to copy the data into user land and then back into the kernel as part of the socket to fill the socket buffer, that we actually bypass this and do this directly inside the kernel. So that moving the data is a lot more efficient. We have some ideas how to do this, but it's not yet, like, I didn't even really start really trying to implement this, because first we need a user land version that is mostly feature complete and that actually runs very well. Another thing that's interesting that I'm interested in is RDMA, using capabilities of the Ethernet drives to actually put the buffers, the TCP packet it receives or the TCP packet actually sends out, to format them specially so that the data is aligned correctly, like directly on a page, so that you can move it back and forth with hardware support. So that you actually have to do even less copying inside the kernel, because then you could just, like, if it is a 4K page that you receive, then you can just do a page flip and move the page from the network stack into the buffer cache, and the I/O is done. So I don't have to copy anything at that time. Yeah, it's never perfect. I want to thanks to Dan for organizing this great conference. It's a pleasure to be here. It's my first time, so yeah. I want to thanks David for doing vSCSI and to actually force me into writing iSCSI-D. I'm not really sure if this is actually a thank you or more like a... It's yet another project that I started and have to finish, so yeah. And I want to thanks Ryan and Henning for hanging around with me and
letting you abuse my laptop.
Your laptop. Are there any more questions? Yep.
What targets have you tested against?
Currently, I tested against the NetBSD iSCSI target, which is software in user land. I tested against the Linux target. I tested against the Transtech hardware, because it's a Linux box, but a hardware target. I know that David runs it against, I think it's a Dell Equalogic.
I think the FreeNAS has an open iSCSI target, but I'm not sure about
that. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, maybe. So we try to test it. I know that a user tested it against the Open Solaris target, and that didn't work. So there I need to figure out how to work around that. Maybe install myself an Open Solaris somehow, but I'm too scared about that at the moment. So I'm really interested in people trying it against, like, real hardware iSCSI devices like the Equalogic. And it's actually pretty interesting. David, who also runs it, he has a lot of Solaris boxes doing iSCSI against the same machine. He came to the conclusion when you run multiple sessions with iSCSI-D, you get the same performance than the Solaris version. So the performance, even so we're bouncing everything through userland and back, is actually not that bad. The only, like, the problem that we have is by bouncing back and forth, we're spending more CPU, so he has less CPU left on the machines. But the performance, like, the performance of the protocol itself is there.
I just checked. I think I got one of those OpenNAS CDs out
front. Okay. Yeah, cool. And one last thing that I actually want to mention is iSCSI-D itself at the moment is 4,000 lines of code. The RFC is 140,000 lines of code or of text. So this shows a little bit like how insane RFCs are getting in the last years. It's so much text they write. Sometimes they just over-specify stuff, and it makes it really hard to implement some. Like, it took me 1 week to get something working against the first target that was an NetBSD target, I had that working after a week. But then it took very long to actually implement all these other special modes for that the RFC actually requires you to implement. So, yeah. I have my hard time with IETF. Yep. Yeah, I have to think about it. It works. Like iSCSI-D is address family neutral. So you can specify at least, I haven't really tested it because my targets don't support it, but I think, I know that Todd Fries is using iSCSI-D and I bet he's running it across IPv6. So it should work. If not, we fix it.
Of course.
Yep. Oh, yeah. So the next talk is by Henning and Ryan, but it's in the other room.
It's not a talk. We celebrate TF's 10th birthday.
You yeah.
Part of that.
And he needs the laptop, so I have to finish now. Thank you very much. Damn it. Oh, no. Ich glaube, es ist ein FS.
Hi, so I'm Julian Elisha.
Hey.
I'm broadcasting. I can hear myself in there.
Yeah. I have to turn it off.
Yeah, sorry.